I feel like I'm at the nightclub in Blade.
Yes, good pull.
About to kill some vampires.
About to shine a UV light on me.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Durance. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. All right.
Was it Blade 2 or Blade 3? Trinity that was filmed in Vancouver, and every single chase scene happened like right there on Griffith's Way.
I believe so. It was Trinity.
Trinity was definitely filmed here, and yeah.
Every single chase scene is that underpass at Griffith's Way.
I know some people in the involved in the film industry here.
Oh, yeah. Relax.
I know some people in the film industry
Everyone knows people in the film industry. It's Vancouver.
Sure.
Anyways. Who worked on that, and some pretty hilarious and legendary stories about the complete lack of give a you know what from Wesley Snipes in the
production of that movie. He was not all in on Blade Trinity, believe it or not.
Respect.
He didn't embrace the heart.
He did not embrace the heart when it came to Blade Trinity. Mailed that one in. All right, 650-650, as mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text
really
line.
It's really not very safe if you don't embrace the blade hard.
I thought you were going to be
right
like,
on
wow,
the
I
shaft,
couldn't tell.
Right?
Okay.
Oh, Tom. embrace the hard. Embrace the hard versus unfinished business. More regrettable slogan, Canucks slogan of the last few years. Which, where are you going?
I think it's got to be embrace the hard. Right? The leader in the clubhouse right now, anyways?
I mean, because at least unfinished business is like...
So the unfinished business was going in after the Boudreaux bump year.
Correct.
Right.
So like the unfinished business was...
They almost got to the playoffs, but they didn't quite.
Oh, man. No, you know what? That one's worse. We almost made the playoffs is such a pathetic bar to like set for a team before the season. I can't get over it.
I think embrace the hard is just going to be more notorious if this... era of the Canucks ends this year because two of the star players couldn't get along.
Yeah.
Like it's more
sorry, the disappointment of this season
it's
is
more
greater.
Antithetical to the slogan itself. You know what I mean? Like embrace the hard, meet pressure with pressure, or you know, mail things in because you don't like your teammate. That is like, yo, you guys chose the latter option. Interesting. It's just exact opposition to what they were trying to get across with the message. So I think this one has a chance to beat out unfinished business in Canucks lore, Canucks fan lore. Man, love these conversations we're having these days. Okay, we did the crossover in the first segment, which means right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 29th, starting with the headlines. And first, we'll deal with some things left over kind of from the Jim Rutherford interview with Gary Mason yesterday. We should note, did a follow-up interview with Ian McIntyre, our colleague at Sportsnet, which you can read at sportsnet.ca. And really, to my eyes, basically doubled down. Certainly, it was not I better go do damage control and walk it back. You know, basically said, look, I'm just saying things that everyone knew already. I don't think it's going to make things more difficult for the players or for the coach because they've already been dealing with this, you know, had the opportunity to dramatically change his tune and did not. So I think that's the most notable takeaway from the additional interview from Jim Rutherford yesterday. We should also mention the Canucks, of course, in Nashville today. No local Canucks reporters on the road with the team, but one of the... Nashville reporters, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean, did ask JT Miller, do you have any reaction? What is your reaction to the comments made by Jim Rutherford? at JT Miller, no comment, and then asked a follow-up question about his relationship with Elias Pettersson by the reporter, declines to comment on that as well. The other Canucks who spoke today, I believe Dakota Joshua and Rick Tocchet, were not asked about it. So no reaction, really, other than the no comment from JT Miller. And as we said off the top of the show, a very, very understandable no comment from JT Miller. And as much as Jim Rutherford can say, like, well, this doesn't change anything for the players, they've already been dealing with it, it does change in the sense that, you know, for all of the, we'll often get texts along these lines, you see them on social media, it's like, oh, it's so hard for these players, they have to be asked about it every day. It's like, they're actually not asked about it every day. They're asked about it when something breaks through. And what was it, like mid-December when there were the reports out there and both Pettersson and JT Miller were asked about it? But I don't think they've been asked about it since then. But Jim Rutherford speaking creates the situation where they are going to be asked about it now.
And they're going to be asked about it again when they get to Vancouver.
Home. Yeah.
Without question. I'm just glad that so many fans are thinking of the players.
But my point is, like, I can understand from JT Miller's perspective being frustrated that your president has created the situation where now it is irrelevant and not just fair or reasonable, but like a mandatory, really, question that you kind of have to put to the player if you're on the beat covering that game in Nashville tonight. So I have no issue either way here. Certainly not, obviously, at the reporter asking him the question, but also not JT Miller declining to give comment on what he thought about Jim Rutherford's comments. So Canucks play the Nashville Predators tonight down in Nashville. With a win, they will leapfrog the Calgary Flames to be back in a playoff spot, back in the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. Nashville has been playing better recently. They lost their most recent game, but they're 7-3 in their last 10. So after that kind of disastrous start, they're not back in the playoff hunt or anything like that, Nashville, but they've certainly turned their season around from where it was early in the year. And as I was saying earlier in the show, I mean, look, if they win three in a row and are back in a playoff spot, that's going to be part of the story considering everything that's going on here. But, you know, normally we do a little bit about the matchup with the Preds and all that. I'm just so fascinated to see what the effort, what the body language, all of that stuff, what it looks like from the Canucks today on the road in Nashville, considering the circumstances. There's been a lot of games like that where that's been kind of the most fascinating thing going on with the team, is trying to kind of read those signals and read between the lines of what's going on behind the scenes. And I think this is another one tonight where what effort do they bring is the most interesting question for me.
Isn't that true every night?
For this team?
Yep.
Yeah, but especially in this one.
Yeah.
Although I think there's a lot of times where it's like, if they have a bad effort, it's not even in an interesting way. You know what I mean?
No, that's true.
But now it is.
Yeah. A bad effort's, I don't know. When your team's just not feeling it, it's never interesting.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And again, that's why I've been a big proponent of end this situation.
Nashville's beaten them twice. You know, there's obviously a ton going on, tons of scrutiny and criticism surrounding this group. And yeah, I mean, you'd hope that there's enough sort of grit for everyone to at least find a way to do the us against the world thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
look, if they're going to be here potentially past the trade deadline, at least make it as least unpleasant as you can for yourself. You know, I don't want to say pleasant because I don't know if that's in the offing, but at least make the situation as tolerable as possible for you, for your teammates, for the fans, for everyone down the stretch here until this situation is resolved. Obviously, they've come close to a couple of moves in recent weeks, but nothing has gotten across the finish line just yet. We're not hearing right now that there's anything in the works. Who knows? That could always change in a hurry, but there's no immediate solution on the horizon. But you're still professional hockey players. You're still making incredible sums of money. There's a baseline level of professionalism that you can show here. And hey, if you're one of these players and you do want to be traded, going out and playing well and showing that professionalism is going to help your case. It's going to make teams more interested. So I'm not going to sit here and say, like, hey, if they win this, all of a sudden, you know, the trades are off, playoffs are back on, season salvaged. I don't think that's what's going on here, but I still think there are stakes for the players involved. Personally, there's stakes for the fan bases, and man, I would love to see a really good effort in that level of professionalism and maturity from these players in Nashville tonight. To the broadsheet here, and we've actually got a non-Miller Pettersson item to get to. We didn't actually get a chance to talk to Rick Dhaliwal about this earlier, but he was talking a little bit about Brock Besser on Donnie and Dolly. Mentioned that Besser has a modified no trade list. Now, Dhaliwal kind of said this was new information. It is on Puckpedia, so I don't know if it was just kind of like no one had really noticed and clocked it, or if Puckpedia has recently added it or what.
I mean, I think it's one of those, at least this would be my assumption, it's one of those where he had the deal and the third year became a movement protection season.
Okay.
Where, you know what I'm saying? Because he's now told, like, you can't have no move or no trade protection until you are eligible for unrestricted free agency. So the Canucks bought one UFA season when they did the three-year deal, the sort of second bridge with Besser. And, you know, I think we just, like, hadn't been top of mind. But, yeah, limited no trade. What was the list?
10-team no trade list.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's powerful, but it's not that powerful. You can basically...
Yeah, I wouldn't frame this as like, oh, their hands are tied. There's ways around that.
Yeah.
Now, I know you make the point, right? Because we always think about, oh, but no, this always depends as well as like, when do you have to submit the no trade list?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because you think of like the classic teams that nobody wants to go to, and they're probably on there. But agents are smart, and they also might think like, hey, if this season does go sideways, who are the teams that might be interested in trading you? And if you don't want that, we can put trading for you. We can put them on the no trade list as well. So it does give the agent and the player a little bit of an opportunity to flex their muscles. But I don't think it should realistically stand in the way of, one, moving Besser, two, getting something close to maximal value if you do decide to move him. And the other piece there from Dhaliwal is that the Besser talks probably on hold until the Miller Pettersson thing is figured out. But that might have to change at some point if Rutherford's leaving the door open to Miller and Pettersson sticking around past the trade deadline to the end of the year. You can't let that hold up all of your other business that you might want to accomplish here. And the Besser situation is fascinating to me, because on the one hand, if you're trying to put a competitive team around Quinn Hughes in the near future, Besser obviously could be a part of that. But if you're making a big pivot and a big change of direction, can you afford to pass up on the opportunity to collect assets for a player like Brock Besser?
Well, no. I mean, I would expect, unless the Canucks are seriously insulated in the eighth spot in the West, which, by the way, absolutely possible. This team is a playoff caliber team without question. But unless that happens, I would think the Canucks would look at it as, we have to protect our overall value. Here, that's sort of what they've done historically, with the exception of last season. And really, even last season, I think they intended to at least take a, you know, good college try at keeping all the guys that they kept beyond the deadline.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see exactly how this sorts itself out. But, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised to hear Besser be among the top trade targets as the deadline approaches. There could still be traction in talks. There could still be the team winning a bunch of games here and, you know, cementing themselves as a clear and obvious playoff team in the West, something that they're not as it stands. I mean, they're not even a playoff spot at the moment, although they're not far away from one. So, yeah, look, will be interesting. One thing to keep in mind, too, is, you know, Winnipeg might be on your no trade list, but that doesn't mean you...
It doesn't mean it's a complete no-go.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that they're not going to approach you and ask you to waive.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, look, that team might have a real shot this year, right? Like, that's not the worst place to go be a rental, right? Even if it's not somewhere you'd want to play.
It's a good point.
Long-term.
When you're a rental, the no-trade dynamics are a lot different than if you have, like, 5 years left on your deal, right? And you're like, well, I'm settling in there for a long time. If you're not going to get the deal you want in Vancouver, and you're probably an unrestricted free agent anyways, not that it's a slam dunk that you go somewhere, but it could grease the wheels.
Yeah, or, like, your usual suspects. So say it's, like, you'd submitted Utah before the season.
Yes.
Well, does that feel as bad today as it might have when you submitted the list? Probably not. Ottawa?
Yeah.
Man,
Columbus.
Kind of interesting. Columbus, perfect example.
Yeah.
Right? So the usual suspects this year are kind of interesting.
That's funny, actually.
You know, like in some ways, if I was a player who'd submitted, like, all of those situations sound
You can at least
pretty
make
interesting.
A case. So like, okay, yeah, I'll go do that for a few months and
yeah.
see.
Yeah. And like I'll play with Adam Fantilli and
yeah.
you know, rebuild my value and take passes on the power play from Zach Werenski. That sounds great.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing with Besser and the Besser situation is, unlike and in stark contrast to the Petey and Miller situations, it's relatively straightforward. It's relatively simple. He's a pending UFA. He's got good value around the league. Yes, he has a 10-team modified no trade. That's fine. But this is the kind of thing where, unlike with Pettersson and Miller, where it's, well, maybe we'll keep them past the deadline. And who knows? We'll see what things look like at the draft. And, you know, you've got Pettersson's no move clause kicking in. Miller has a full new move clause. With Besser, it's very clear. You got to make a decision by the trade deadline. But it's also the kind of thing, you know, the trade deadline is March 7th, Friday, March 7th. You can make your decision Wednesday, March 5th, and you'll be fine. You know what I mean? And you can, there'll be a market for Brock Besser, and you can probably still make the deal. So they have time here. They're probably going to use it. They've got other things going on. But the Besser situation continues to be one to monitor for the Vancouver Canucks. To the lineup notes, and this is all courtesy of our guy, Dan Murphy, who is on the ground, I should note, of course, as part of the broadcast in Nashville. Thatcher Demko will get the start. Dakota Joshua returns to the lineup. And then Murph says, judging by lines at the skate yesterday, I would think Noah Juulsen is back. And it looked like Max Sasson and defenseman Elias Pettersson were the scratches. But he says, have to wait and see. So Joshua back, Juulsen potentially back as well, Sasson and Elias Pettersson coming out, and Thatcher Demko gets the start for the Vancouver Canucks. And man, they could really, really use a good Thatcher Demko performance. Demko, I'm sure, would love a good Thatcher Demko performance right about now against the Predators tonight in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, Demko needs a win, man. Demko needs a win. And as poor as Nashville has been this season, like, they do some interesting things in terms of how they attack as a team, and they've got some sick one-shot scorers. We've seen, you know, repeatedly this season what Steven Stamkos can do. So Demko's going to need to be sharp here, and the Canucks need him to be sharp. What's the conversation going to be like if he's not?
Well, there's going to be a lot of questions asked about why Kevin Lankinen wasn't in the crease.
Well, that too.
Number one.
And a lot of questions asked about when we'll see Demko again.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty high stakes start for an obviously talented player, elite player, frankly, when he is up and running and himself, who's obviously had a really, really difficult campaign for a variety of reasons.
What do you think about Elias Pettersson coming out of the lineup?
I mean, I liked what we saw. I like any time the Canucks can have a little bit more mobility on the back end, I think it looks totally different. So I don't love him coming out of the lineup. But I, you know, it's not like he was a world beater or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think, put it this way. I can understand why the Canucks would want Juulsen's penalty killing in the lineup against this Predators team, given what the Predators have done to the Canucks on the power play. And I do think that getting any ounce of like reduction in speed on the back end hurts this team whenever it happens.
Yeah. I don't have a big problem with it. I think you're right that you'd like to just see a different look, but how much of that is just kind of frustration and the tedium of seeing the same problems over and over and over again from the blue line so far this year? I should also note that I believe if they're going to activate both Dakota Joshua and Noah Juulsen from IR for tonight's game, that they would need to make a roster move to send somebody down. So we'll keep an eye out for that. They have some guys on the roster that don't need to go through waivers, so they've got options there. You know, Carlson, Sasson, Atu Ratu, but he was just called up, Elias Pettersson. So we'll keep an eye and see if anything does happen before the game tonight against Nashville. And a quick playoff standings update. Calgary lost last night in regulation, so the Canucks' playoff chances per Dom's model, they tick up ever so slightly from 75% to 76%. The model doesn't really see Calgary as big contenders to hold on to that spot anyway, so their loss moves the needle ever so slightly, but not too much for this team. And as mentioned, they are 1 point back of Calgary with the same number of games played, so an opportunity to leap over Calgary into the final wild card spot if they pick up the win in Nashville. And, you know, notable, the teams chasing them, right? They handed St. Louis their third loss in a row. Utah is 4-6 in their last 10. That none of those teams have really been able to put that run together. Even Utah, with the talent they have, to really make things difficult and make life hairy for the Canucks just yet. So despite it all, despite everything, and despite what their president had to say this week, Canucks still in a pretty decent position as the playoffs are concerned. Betting, gambling update for us.
Nashville Predators are favored on home ice. That's tough, man. The Predators are 18-23-7.
How much different do you think the line would be if Lankanen was starting?
I don't think that significantly.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just curious.
Yeah, -145 Predators, +125 for the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, that's speaks volumes, man. You're not expected by the markets to beat the Predators. They're one of the worst teams in the West.
Playing a lot better recently.
Shut up shop. Let's all go home.
What? Because of the gambling odds?
Yeah.
Well, it's still instructive, Dom.
No, oh, I know. I'm being sarcastic, Thomas.
Oh, okay. I'm not doing the, like, they don't even have to play the game. The market's already decided. I'm just saying it's a good indicator of objective team quality and how people view it. And this Canucks team is pretty clearly, I mean, granted they're on the road, but I mean, it's not like they're on the back-to-back.
I do also.
Or at a rest disadvantage.
I do wonder how much of it is about the drama surrounding the team.
Yeah, people just don't want to.
Hard to have a lot of confidence in them right now.
Yep.
When the president doesn't have the confidence in them, it's very, very difficult, I think, to be like, yeah, I feel really good about what they're going to do out there tonight.
But they're materially better than Nashville. So I don't
Should
know.
Be.
I don't hate the Canucks at plus money in Nashville. I'm going to say that right now. I'm going to tout that.
A tout? An official tout?
I'm going to tell you.
I touted, I mean, I thought the Blues, too. I thought, how can the Blues? This is the most miserable team in hockey. Most directionless, purposeless.
You sure about that?
Team in the league. What?
You sure they're the most miserable team in hockey?
That's a good point, Dom.
Long term, I, you know what? I would not trade Vancouver's, I would not trade Vancouver's roster and outlook for St. Louis's ever.
Good barbecue, though.
I think it's overrated.
What's your favorite? By the way, that's the whiteboard. What's your favorite barbecue? Regional barbecue.
I mean, you got to go whole hog North Carolina.
Carolina's really good.
Yeah, yeah. And I like the Eastern, the vinegary barbecue sauce in the East as opposed to the
super sugary.
As opposed to the super sugary in the West. Vinegary is East. I got those mixed up. But yeah, that's my favorite. And then I will say I love now in the South they wouldn't call it barbecue, but I love the like pitmaster style out of Texas where you get like the brisket or the short rib.
Going to Austin, I went to Austin once and the brisket was like by far the highlight. Love brisket.
Yeah, but of course,
like if I'm at barbecue places and it's brisket versus ribs, brisket every time.
But in the
every time.
But in the deep South, of course, they would say that's not barbecue. It has to be whole hog to qualify as barbecue.
Nah.
I know, I'm more flexible than that.
Get over yourselves.
I agree with you.
Get over yourselves, guys.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, like, when people are like, what's your favorite type of barbecue? I'm like, the one you don't consider barbecue is definitely a top two for me.
I definitely do not have that itch, that issue. Give me the brisket. Give me all the brisket. And that Carolina pulled pork.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Whole hog, Carolina pulled pork barbecue. Unbelievable.
Well, I'm glad we settled that.
Yep.
All right. That's it.
Sounds like we could eat meat together, my friend.
Yeah.
Sounds like we have roughly the same taste. Meat is good.
Sounds like we could eat meat together. What a thing to say. What a way to wrap up the show. But that is the show for today. We will be back tomorrow for more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.